There's got to be an explanation to all these UFO sightings, right? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
The Joyce Kaufman Podcast is being brought to you by Code Red Roofers, South Florida's leading residential and commercial roof experts. Code Red Roofers, roofers that respond. Call 844-4-CODE-RED or visit CodeRedRoofers.com.
To my colleague, Dan Bongino, whose mother passed suddenly last night. And when I first got the news, and I didn't get it from listening on the radio because, as most of you know, we were running a game, which is the last game of this series that we'll have to be running because I believe the team lost. But so I wasn't listening, and I got a text message from someone who said, you know, Dan's mother had passed. And they were listening. The person who texted me doesn't live in America. So they were listening online somewhere. And all I kept thinking was, in the year 2009, which was one of the most volatile years of my life in so many different ways, it's almost hard to believe that I went through as many things as I did that year. But both of my parents passed in 2009 within 6 weeks of one another, even though they were not married, hadn't been married for many, many years. My mother was in Puerto Rico. And my father was in Virginia. And I was able to be with them both in the end. And I came back from my father passed on July 4th of 2009, my mother in May. But I came back. He passed on a Sunday, and I came back that night to South Florida, and I went on the air the next day. And I did what I would have to believe, and this is, you know, I'm my own harshest critic, I'll tell you that right now. But I did what I have to believe was the best show I ever did in my life. Because basically, I paid tribute to my mother and father. I'm an oral person. I don't write very well. I mean, I write better than the average bubba head. But I'm not a writer, I talk. And so the way that I process things, good or bad, is orally. And so when I went on the air that day, and I was doing 3 hours then, I literally talked about my parents because it was new enough that my mother had passed and it was literally 24 hours later from when my father passed. And for months, I had requests from people, because in those days we didn't have like the podcast that went up immediately afterwards. You know, now I have all that stuff that Shireen is able to do so that if you miss the show or you want to hear a show again, you can just do it online. Well, back then that didn't exist, but we did record the shows. So I got more requests for that show than I had than probably any other show, all my other shows cumulative. And people kept telling me that it helped them get closure on their own experiences. So I just sent Dan a message saying, look, I understand why you went on. And I also understand that you're going to get grief from people. There's a whole bunch of people who are going to tell you, how could you talk and why would you share and blah, 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 especially some of the hard stuff that he just shared. And I had to do the same thing. There was some hard stuff. It wasn't all just, you know, my hero. There was a lot of my hero, but there was also some hard stuff. And I said, I totally understand why you were able to go on the air, why you had to go on the air, because that's how we process. And then I started thinking, people ask me all the time, are you almost done? And when are you retiring? What will it be like when you retire? And just last night, My husband and I went to see Clint Holmes, who's a phenomenal entertainer. And when we were coming out of the show, we commented about how we were pretty confident that retirement, complete retirement, was going to be great. Like, we weren't nervous about it. A lot of people will tell you, I don't want to retire, you know, I'm afraid I'll just wither away, or I'll implode, or well, all these other things. My husband and I were talking about, no, it's going to be great. Can't wait, you know. And then I thought about just that when I heard Dan's last 10 minutes on the air. Because had he not been able to process that the way he did, he'd have to be lying in some analyst couch. Really, you got to go on the psychiatrist bench or couch when you don't have a place that you can process things that are life-changing, life-shattering. And so, you know, I offer him my deepest condolences, and I'm sure that his listeners, who are so attached to him, because that's what happens. It's a beautiful thing that you guys become very intimate in your attachment to us, because you probably hear, listen, I listened to radio personalities with more passion and intensity than I ever listened to any husband, because, well, primarily because it wasn't the real life stuff that gets in the way. Not worrying about how you pay your bills or what's for dinner, but really big, important stuff. So you listen intensely to a radio personality, and if they let you in to their personal lives, you form a connection that's really unrivaled, unparalleled in all the world. I could never be the kind of personality that didn't share the innermost workings of my mind, because that's what this show is really all about. What is it about my head that makes you think it's relevant what I'm thinking or what I'm saying? There has to be an intimacy, and I know that. So, you know, I was just reminded of that with a sudden loss of a parent. And, you know, I'm at the stage now where I've literally been an orphan for so long. And people get offended when I say that, like, ew, don't say you're an orphan. Well, once you have lost both of your parents, that's the definition of an orphan. I still have both of my parents' phone numbers in my phone. I'm sure you do too, have people in your phone who have departed, who have transitioned, and you just can't take them out. I have no idea who has those phone numbers now. I don't dial them, but they're there. And there's sort of a permanence about having them in my phone that comforts me. I remember in the first couple of years, and you know, I have no idea why this is bringing up so much emotion, but yeah, I do. Because we're all at that age now where you start thinking about these things regularly. And I certainly am at that age. I can't speak for you, but I got the promise. You know, Moses was promised 70. That's 70. I got it. Everything else is like total gravy. And I know that. But I have an obligation, and so does everybody else, to be thoughtful about this aging process. Very different than what I imagined it was going to be like. It really is. So I just, I do bear my soul. I heard him bear his soul, Dan Bongino, and lots of us bear our souls on the air. And there'll be lots of people who will have negative comments to say about it. I know I took a real, there was even a mention in a newspaper, a local newspaper, like, what's wrong with her? She went on the air that day. Well, there's nothing wrong with me. I didn't have to pay a therapist to listen. I had all these thousands of close personal friends whose names I don't even know who were willing to listen to me, and who all told me afterwards that it helped them, that kind of show is a healing for everybody. So I hope that, you know, I know that Dan listens quite often, especially if he's, you know, got to jump in the car or something after his own program. And, you know, I want to be the first person to say it took guts to do the show today, but it also was healing, not just for you, but for me. And I'm not dealing with that today. It's a long time since I had to deal with it firsthand. But you never forget. And yes, you are an orphan, whether people want to play word games or not. That's the definition of an orphan, is when you don't have any living parents. And I do not. I am now the matriarch of my family. How about that? Never thought I'd be able to say that. But here I am. And that's the truth. A lot of things going on. I mean, obviously, I don't even know where to begin with some of the news that's out there. I had promised a couple of different things that I was going to get to today, and I'm going to make an effort to get through them, even though more news has come. And if I let today's news pass by while I cover yesterday or the day before's news, then tomorrow I'm not going to have any opportunity to talk about tomorrow's news. And I know that. So I'll try to do everything I can, get as much in as I can today. Tomorrow I do have Matt Gaetz coming on the show. I'm going to talk about this influx of Haitian immigrants. And if you hear my thought of the day today, I have to tell you, talk about an interesting, important writing that Alex Berenson, one of my favorite go-to Substack writers, I just quoted him today. I told the story about how if you're a legal immigrant coming into the United States right now, you are required to get 16 vaccinations or series of vaccinations. And when it comes to the COVID vaccination, you can't just have had one shot. You have to have a completed series of shots, even though we all know they don't work. And they're actually now finding out more every day about the dangers of these mRNA vaccinations, but hey, or not, whatever you call them, shots, jabs. But Alex wrote this piece, how is it that we would insist that people coming in legally fulfill all these requirements? And makes sense to me, right? You don't want to bring in diseases that we conquered a long time ago. You don't want new diseases that we may never have seen and don't know how to treat coming in. So it makes perfect sense. But when they cross the southern border, no vaccinations required. No questions asked. We don't even ask them, where are you coming from? How is that not the craziest thing you ever heard? Sometimes when I say out loud how this country is operating, I feel embarrassed, because maybe somebody's listening in New Zealand today. I know there's someone listening in New Zealand, right? And they're thinking, what's wrong with America? You know, why would they have all those stringent requirements for legal immigrants to come into their country, but the people crossing the southern border aren't required to do squat? All they got to do is shout, asylum, asylum, and it's a game. They win. They're in. So listen to my thought of the day. You get to hear it tomorrow morning on Jen and Bill's morning show, right at the end of their show at, I guess it's 8:58 or something like that. And I don't know if it airs at any other time, but it's definitely going to be online if you want to look. It's another good reason to have the app on your phone, the 850 WFTL app. Then you can listen to today's thought of the day. Because what are the odds that you won't hear it if you don't have an app? Probably pretty high. So get the app, and then you can hear the thought of the day. And tell me if it doesn't just make your hair hurt to think about that. And I don't use it. Alex Berenson used an expression that I used to use constantly on the air until somebody told me, stop using that expression on the air, you overused it. And I stopped completely, but he used it, so I used it in today's thought of the day. The words are, the 12th of never. Great. It's a great way of stating the obvious. Anyway, let me take a break. Stay right where you are. I'll be right back.
Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
So just in case you have managed to avoid some of the most obvious news out there, there are now four criminals who are vying to become the ruler of Haiti. One of them is a wannabe rapper. Two of them are ex-police officers. And one is like a voodoo guy. That ought to tell you a lot about what it's like in Haiti right now. And they're all trying to figure out which one of them is going to take control of this mess, because the Prime Minister, Ariel Henry, said, "I will resign," like he had a choice. I mean, this was a criminal insurrection. That's why I get so angry when they keep referring to January 6th as an insurrection. You know, don't minimize what an insurrection is or what it looks like, because there's one taking place right now off the shores of Florida. And it doesn't look anything like January 6th, I assure you. So the most recognizable face of this rebellion is a man by the name of, now I'm not kidding, this is his name, Barbecue. Okay. So he's a gang leader. He's a mobster. He's a notorious mobster. They're not relenting. Even though the Prime Minister stepped down, they said, "We're going to continue to fight for Haiti's liberation." Barbecue and these other three guys, especially the one who's like the voodoo guy, are fascinating. Now, U.S. Marines flew into Haiti in the middle of the night to evacuate the embassy staff because things were getting pretty scary. However, as usual, this administration can't seem to evacuate American citizens when terrible things happen in other countries, whether it's Afghanistan or it's now Haiti. They just leave people. They don't even seem to know that certain people are there. Corey Mills, who's a Florida representative, once again, he, by the way, has rescued people out of Israel. He's rescued people out of Afghanistan. He's ex-military, knows a lot of people, gets things done. He just had to go down to Haiti and do some rescue mission. Because the Biden administration, they obviously have no clue how to do anything. So Jimmy Barbecue Cherizé, I think it's I've heard it pronounced 10 different ways, so let's just go with Barbecue, loves to do interviews. I've seen a dozen interviews with this guy in the last, 72 hours. And he always wears a bulletproof vest. I mean, he wants to make sure you know that you can't take him out very easily. Okay. He leads a group of gangs that all united themselves under the banner G9. And, of course, they're claiming that they stand for the upright man, for the, the common man. But then he keeps attacking the food supply and the water supply so that the poorest people in the country are suffering the most. I happen to have a foster child through Compassion International who lives in Haiti, Judeline. Now, I've been fostering Judeline for, she's now 16. So I've been fostering her for 14 or 15 years. She was a baby when I started it. And I write to her and she writes back and we trade pictures and all that good stuff. I send, chickens and roosters and goats for Christmas so that the family has milk and has eggs and things like that. It's, when you think about what people do without, you can open your heart. So poor Judeline and her people, since I started sponsoring this child, there have been like 5 changes in government, and none of them have been for the better. So now we have Barbecue leading this group of gangs, claiming, oh, it's all about the common man, and then inflicting all kinds of pain. They got gasoline shortages. And he wants, you know, the claim is that there needs to be a more equitable system, a more justice, you know, more justice in Haiti. But of course, the irony of that is that they got nothing but armed groups running around in Port-au-Prince right now, creating hell for anybody who's living. And he happens to, by the way, be accused of mass murder. And now he's saying, well, there's going to be a civil war that's going to erupt if the ex-prime minister, the one who resigned, Henry, returns to the country. I don't know if he's actually that powerful. I've been reading a couple of different experts, Michael D. Baird and other people who've spent a lot of time in Haiti, studying Haiti. And, you know, they don't think he's as powerful as the news media is making him seem. But the most obvious left behind person was a guy that Corey Mills went and rescued who operates orphanages in Haiti. Now, mind you, I'm affiliated with Compassion International, which operates all kinds of not just children's services, but entire families, entire communities. They have schools, they have orphanages, they got a whole lot of stuff going on. But they're kind of flying under the radar and always have. You know, it's an international organization. They have a particularly good leadership. But the one of the people they left behind was a guy by the name of Mitch Albom. Now, you know that name sounds familiar to you, right? Because you have probably read, or if you haven't read it, you know about Tuesdays with Maury and The Timekeeper and The 5 People You Meet in Heaven, all these books that Mitch Albom has written. He's a very high profile author, journalist, musician. He's got, I think that book, Tuesdays with Maury, sold like 40 million copies. Well, they left him behind. That's right. He was one of the American volunteers that had to be rescued from Haiti, not by the Biden administration, not by the United States military, no, by a mission led by a Florida congressman by the name of Corey Mills. Now think about that. What on earth would be more important than rescuing a high-profile American? I mean, I think you should rescue every American. But certainly, you ought to be aware of where a guy like Mitch Albom is. And then you ought to have him rescued. But they didn't. So Corey Mills had to go in there, not just rescuing him, because I don't think Corey Mills cares at all about the level of fame or anything else. He was just doing what the military has always been trained to do, is that we don't leave anybody behind, right? Well, apparently this administration has a tendency to leave people behind. It's horrific. So all I can tell you is you ought to be very careful about travel, at least until this administration is out of there. Because God forbid anything happens, and it doesn't mean that you did anything, but if you happen to be traveling in a country where there's a lot of unrest and something goes down, they'll come get you the 12th of never. I'm going to use that expression every 10 seconds. I can feel it. But that's what's, you know, you better hope Corey Mills is looking for you. Because otherwise, you could stay there. When even the New York Times is writing articles saying, like, what on earth? what the front door happened. Why was there no consideration given to getting American volunteers out of there? We'll see, because it's got to be hellacious there. Even on a good day, it's pretty hellacious in Haiti. But in the middle of a gang-led overthrowing of the government, it's got to be a living nightmare. I give an enormous amount of respect to people who actually go do mission work in places like Haiti, because you really don't know. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. And now you can be pretty sure that if something does happen, you better hope Corey Mills knows about it, the congressman, because the White House will not be prepared and wouldn't apparently do anything anyway. So that was a news story I thought needed to be told. The influx of immigrants now coming in from Haiti is once again going to be legion. And can you blame them? It's got to be frightening to be going through this upheaval again and again. And, you know, Haiti sits on this island where on the other side of the island is a very prosperous, very beautiful Dominican Republic. But Haiti is constantly going through these kinds of horrific, nightmarish scenarios. And I don't know if voodoo has anything to do with it. But I certainly would consider maybe shying away from all that voodoo stuff, because it doesn't seem to be protecting the people at all. Anyway, let me take a quick break. Stay right where you are. I got a lot more I got to talk about. I still got some cleanup on aisle 5 from yesterday. So stay where you are. I promise I'll be right back. So now we understand that we're going to have to deal with an influx of people coming in any day now. So Matt Gaetz is going to be on my show tomorrow because he's already predicting what's going to happen. And I can make the same prediction, although I can't do it with the clarity that he can because he sees what's going on in D.C. But we already have all kinds of special accommodations for people who are fleeing situations like the Haitians are going to be fleeing now and have been for, I don't know, since I got to Florida. When I first got to Florida, the big news story and what we covered almost daily on the radio, on talk radio, was people coming across from Cuba. People fleeing Castro. And it was very hard to be not sympathetic because we live here and because the Cubans who were fleeing Castro were for the most part pretty well educated, had many of them had great professional lives in Cuba. They weren't poor. You know, it's a very different picture of the people you see fleeing in Haiti. And still, it was so controversial. SOS, Save Our Shores. I mean, we had so many things going on. You couldn't do a radio program in South Florida or maybe anywhere in the southeastern United States without that being a number one subject. But we've been going through so many crazy immigration stories for the last 30 years that, I don't know, I don't think people are going to be particularly moved by this influx of Haitian immigrants. Not to mention, we got a whole lot of people serving in Congress right now who are of Haitian descent. Sheila McCormis, whatever, I don't even know what her name is anymore. She has like a number of last names. Sheila McCormick, Kressler, anyway, she's serving in the seat that I'll see what I could steal Hastings sat in for so long. She's of a Haitian descent, and she's not the only congressional person. We have people in leadership who are of Haitian descent. So there's going to be friendly ears listening to these stories for the next couple of days. And I figured Matt Gaetz will be a hot potato. His is not going to be the same story or the same spin that everybody else has. But it needs to be examined because the majority of the people who come across in the next, let's say, 6 months, fleeing this horrific scene in Haiti, are going to be poor and need a lot of assistance. Let's just start there. And they're also going to be dark-skinned. And you will hear all of the usual stories about, like, well, when the light-skinned Cubans came over, everybody was very welcoming, and now they don't want to welcome the dark-skinned Haitians. Well, first and foremost, I never had that experience. People were pretty upset about the light-skinned Cubans when I got here to South Florida, because they were just mass quantities of people coming to the shore. People were frustrated that if you went south of Broward County for a long time, English was not the first language anymore. And people were running into areas where street signs were now in Spanish, and where police officers spoke Spanish and maybe didn't even speak English. And, oh, let me tell you, it was a nightmare. It had nothing to do with anybody's skin color either. Although you could make the case, and nobody likes when I talk about this, but I really don't care. It is the truth. Fidel Castro's decision to elevate the common man meant that all the people who had any wealth, any money, or any skills, real skills, were doctors, lawyers, engineers, they were white, and they were the ones who fled. And what was left in Cuba were the darker-skinned poor peones, the ones who lived in the hills and in the mountains, and things had never been very good for them anyway, so communism was not so bad for them. And he depended on that. In Haiti, nobody has ever had it good. I remember when I first started covering the difference between Haitian immigrants and Cuban immigrants were being treated in the 90s and in 2000s, I kept saying, you could not show me an instance where there wasn't a racial component to the difference in the treatment. There definitely was. And yet nobody was allowed to talk about that. And instead, we had to create TPU, status, temporary protective status. We had all this, shenanigans, jumping through hoops to prove that we weren't racist. Well, how about the fact that we really weren't sure how we were going to accommodate tens of thousands of illiterate, unskilled, and in many cases, diseased people who had never had decent health care in their lives? The Cubans may not have good health care now, although Michael Moore will tell you they do, but they certainly did. When those immigrants came over, they were basically healthy individuals, many of whom had, like I said, professions and money in the bank that the government took from them. And they came down here and they started all over again, and they built thriving communities, no question about it. But I used to argue, because as a person who had restaurant businesses in my family, the hardest working employees that I could get in South Florida at that time were Haitian immigrants. I had guys, I still know some of them to this day, they're still friends of mine, who would work for, let's say, the diner from the breakfast shift. They'd be in there at 5 o'clock in the morning and they'd work until mid-afternoon, and then they'd go off to another job where they did a dinner shift at some restaurant, and then they'd go clean office buildings at night. I mean, it wasn't unusual to find people who were working two and three jobs at all times. And living in, stacked up in one apartment, trying to get enough money put together so that they could bring their wives and their kids over. And so I always had a real softness for the Haitian immigrants or illegal immigrants that I met, because they were coming over on boats. And when I say boats, it wasn't like you and I think of a boat. They didn't even have the luxury that the Cubans did when they were, tying together pontoons with oversized tractor tires. No. They were coming across on like floating on pieces of wood. Very dangerous, very perilous. And, you know, and treated as though they were literally, you know, carrying the plague. Now I got people coming across my southern border who literally are carrying plagues. We have a cluster, if you hear my thought of the day, there's a measles cluster in Chicago right now. Now, mind you, when there was a couple of instances here in Broward County where I live out west, where one of the schools had, I think it was 5 cases of measles. And our Surgeon General, Joseph Lodapo, had said, well, I'm not quarantining anybody. This will pass. There's only 4 cases. And I think that was maybe 2-3 months ago. There's no cases now. He was right. Oh, but you could have heard the mainstream media. Oh, my God, we're going to have measles everywhere. We didn't. But guess what? The people in Chicago, they came across the border. That's right. So that cluster of, I think it was 8, could easily turn into 80. But the media, no coverage at all. If Alex Berenson wasn't even talking about it, I wouldn't know about it. It's definitely not in the mainstream. But that's the kind of hypocrisy that has everybody really weary, really weary. And why I keep looking at the mailers that I'm getting from the Lara Trump and Michael Whatley, the new leaders of the RNC, these guys know that this is going to be a slam dunk election if the Democrats are carefully watched and don't figure out how to cheat in some new way. All the old cheating methods are not going to work, not with these Trump supporters now running the RNC. They're pretty clever, though, so we'll see. Don't forget, coming up after me, Eric Erickson, followed by Joe Pags and Lars Larson. And at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning, Jen and Bill will be back with the South Florida Morning Show. At 9 o'clock, Brian Kilmeade. At noon, it won't be Dan Bongino tomorrow. He's got to, get on an airplane and go take care of his loss, his mother passing. I don't know who's filling in for him, but whoever. And then I'll be back at 3 o'clock. But I still have a segment left today, so don't touch that dial. Just stay right where you are. So somebody sent me this ad in LinkedIn. Gosh, I still haven't gotten to half the stories. Well, I guess they weren't that important. But this ad was on LinkedIn. Now, I don't do any hiring anymore, so it's not like I look at that section of LinkedIn, but my friend will send me things that she knows are interesting and that I probably won't see on my own. She doesn't hassle me with a lot of crazy stuff, but she also happens to be part of a law enforcement agency, so she really does get some great inside memorandums that she will share with me. But she sent me this LinkedIn link, and this is the headline, okay? Protesting Giants for Hire. Crowds on Demand is the name of the business. And Adam Swart is the founder and CEO at Crowds on Demand. Now, listen to what he describes his organization as. Crowds on Demand is a leader in incentivized activism. Now, what is incentivized activism? Think about that. It's paid activism, which isn't activism at all. Anyway, he goes on. He says, we specialize in organizing and staffing events, protests, and rallies with passionate individuals who are eager to make their voices heard. And we will help you put together a group of protesters, and listen to this particular group that he's looking to hire. This is mind-boggling to me, but, you know, what can I tell you? You must be 7 feet or taller, and you must weigh over 300 pounds, but you can't be too big to fit on an airplane. You must be able to stand and walk for extended periods. You must have a commitment to peaceful protest and constructive activism. You must have flexibility to work irregular hours, including weekends and evenings as needed. Previous experience in activism or security is a plus, but not mandatory. The benefits? Competitive hourly compensation to participate in causes you care about. You're right. It was like when I went to Washington with the shoes and I asked one of the protesters, like, you know, what are you protesting actually? And he said, I don't know. They gave me lunch and a you know, $25 and a bus ride. Oh, okay. You can tell you're a real activist. Anyway, you will also receive travel expenses, including extra leg room. How about that? Because they're 7 feet tall, these dudes or dudettes. Opportunity to be part of a dynamic team and contribute to meaningful causes. Meaningful to who? Flexible scheduling to accommodate other commitments. Hey, it doesn't have to be your only job. How to apply? Competitive hourly compensation to participate in causes you care about. Application deadline is Saturday, March 30th of 2024. We're running out of time here, folks. If you want the job, if you happen to be 7 feet tall and weigh over 300 pounds, they're looking for individuals like you. This is a giant opportunity. Oh God, I couldn't resist. For those who are more than 7 feet tall and weigh over 300 pounds, your presence at events will be pivotal in adding an undeniable intimidation factor, bringing a, quote, giant to the gate, end quote, of organizations accused of wrongdoing, and helping to ensure our protests are taken seriously and can achieve their intended impact. We're looking for up to 20 giants to regularly show up to protests. Your responsibility? Be a huge presence at protests, rallies, and events as part of a coordinated group. Use your physical presence to contribute to the overall impact and visibility of the event. Engage with the public and media in a respectful and impactful manner as directed. Remain peaceful and composed under all circumstances, adhering to Crowds on Demand's code of conduct. And you must be willing to travel to various locations. Can you believe that? Believe it. Because it's true. I thank you for your time this time. Until next time, My decision is to be back here tomorrow at 3, if it be his will and he delays his coming. What lies behind us and what lies ahead of us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. So wherever you are, just be yourself. Everybody else is taken. And then may God bless you. I say a special prayer right now for my colleague, Dan Bongino. May God bless him and his entire family as his mom transitioned. And then may God bless the United States of America. See you tomorrow at 3 o'clock.
The Joyce Kaufman Podcast has been brought to you by Code Red Roofers, South Florida's leading residential and commercial roof experts. Code Red Roofers, roofers that respond. Call 844-4-CODE-RED or visit CodeRedRoofers.com.